The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
You're listening to the newly rebranded Fire Breslow Podcast, presented by the Bastards of Boston Baseball. I'm your host, Charlie Smith. You can find me on Twitter/X at Smith_MLB. My co-hosts for this one are Jason Kelly, who I haven't had the pleasure of doing business with in a while, at The Color of the Iris Spelled the Proper Way, and Juan Liriano at Juan on MLB. If you want more Bastards of Boston Baseball, check out BastardsOfBostonBaseball.com for any fun content. Believe you me, there's going to be quite a bit of fun stuff, especially after the last one. So before we get into this, I just want to get a temperature check for both of you. Jason, then Juan, how are you feeling?
I still feel pretty much the same, if not a little bit worse, because this offense just gets more and more pathetic every single game, which I didn't think was possible because, you know, you're heading into the West Coast, you're going up against one of the worst teams in baseball in a hitter-friendly park, and two runs on a guy who came into the game with an ERA over 5. Like, that's all you can manage? You don't hit anything out of the park. They're still playing, you know, merry-go-round at catcher, which is weird. It's kind of the same. Your starting pitching does great. You don't have to worry about your starting pitching. Your bullpen, for the most part, up until tonight, does really well. And your lineup just doesn't give you anything. So, once again, it's just this team is only going to go so far as their offense will carry them, and their offense can't carry them at all. So, yeah, you're a last-place team. You're dipping further and further back into the wildcard race, which, again, in the American League, if you're out of the wildcard race, you're a truly pathetic team because the American League is garbage this year. So you're now at a point where you're with the Angels. You're alongside the Angels in terms of bad American League teams. That is a new low. So yeah, it's just, I wish I could say I'm surprised, but I'm really not. I just feel like the offense gets worse and worse and worse, and they dip further back in the standings, and it just makes me all the more want to say, you know what, at the deadline, sell, fire sale, let's go, because it's not going to get any better.
Yeah, that's what Artie Moreno is, the owner of the Angels, and that's quite an indictment. If you're doing as bad as they are, not good. Juan, temp check.
I'm the vibes guy on the podcast, and typically after a win, I'm ready to go streaking because I'm thinking about that win. And nights like tonight, I feel like I kind of just, you know, I don't want to do anything. I'm done. And it pains me that we know where this team stands. They're not good offensively. Pitching, they're, you know, above average at this point. The bullpen was supposed to be the best in the league. And, well, we saw what happened tonight. And then we get the news of the guy that's taking over, or at least that will continue to take over the trade deadline, which to me, that was kind of like the crush of the day. Nothing is going well for this team. What can go wrong will go wrong, like Stephen A. loves to say. This is rock bottom as a Boston Red Sox fan.
I was a little bit behind, admittedly so, in the war room where I said, this doesn't look good. And I wasn't really reading the comments and taking it at face value. I'm like, I don't really get it. What do you mean, Jason? What do you mean? Like, this is it. Oh, no. Don't worry. It's going to be a great show. Everything's going to be fine. Or whatever the line was. I don't remember. And sure enough, I proceeded to then watch a single, a bunt where your guy didn't cover first base, and then game over. So my temperature could not be any lower. The Boston Red Sox were up 2-0 going into the bottom of the ninth inning, where they surrendered 4 more hits in the ninth, and 8 straight hits to end the game, which I had to double check because I was like, no, there's no way. There's no way that happened. We're not that bad. There's no way. But the Boston Red Sox find a way. They just find a way to be epically bad. 0-for-3 for your first three guys and all three strike out. That hasn't happened since 1905 in baseball. That's unbelievable. That wasn't today, but might as well have been. Jason already talked about the fact that you're in a hitter-friendly park and you can't hit a home run. You couldn't get one, not one. And you only scored 2 runs at Coors against the Rockies, the worst statistically speaking team in baseball. You barely skated by going into the 9th inning, but you showed again why the Boston Red Sox need 5 runs in a game in order to win a game, because they can't do it with 2. They can't do it with 3. They couldn't do it with 4. And truth be told, Juan and I were talking about it before you joined, Jason. They would have lost this game before the third runner had crossed the plate if they weren't doing Boston Red Sox things. The Colorado Rockies are a bad baseball team too. You have the bases loaded and you're going to try to run on Sadon. You're down by 2. You have 1 out. Just be smart. Maybe you get a run in. You blow that, and then you proceed to have, I think it was it Willie Castro? I think it was Willie Castro who got thrown out on the way, thrown out on the way back to second from third, caught in the pickle. You had a run there. You might have had 2, but you totally messed it up. Just blatant stupidity. And the Colorado Rockies had no extra base hits until McCarthy in the bottom of the 9th with the bases loaded and no outs. And Jaren Duran just struggled. I don't know. We have to start the show on a positive note, so I think we should do that. Otherwise, all three of us are going to, turn into 3 people from 28 Days Later, and that doesn't end well. Foreshadowing for those who haven't seen the movie. You haven't seen it, go see it. It's old as hell, but go check it out. I think it's Juan leading us off today, right?
Yeah, and I think, again, trying to find the positive with this team, it's becoming more difficult by the day. But, I want to give props to a guy that initially I was kind of done with him. I felt like he was a little leaguer. I didn't think that he was a major league player. And that's Caleb Durbin. He's turned things around since he got benched for those 3 days. And I got some numbers for you. In the last 18 games, well, tonight he went 2 for 3 or 2 for 4. He had an RBI double. Defensively, he's a complete stud. You saw what happened in the 9th inning. He was kind of waiting for Monasterio to cover first. And that's what happened when you have utility players come in, because that's what the Boston Red Sox are. Defensively, you know where you're getting from him. He's fighting. I'd say he's fighting for that gold glove at their base. And offensively, in the last 18 games, 309 batting average, 4 home runs, 7 RBIs, 17 hits, and an OPS of 902. He's been doing his thing. So I want to give credit to Caleb Durbin. He sort of realized what was happening right before him. Right? You go from Alex Bregman, the leadership that he brought to this team. The pivot, of course, was Caleb Durbin. We passed on Bregman. We passed on Alonso. And that was kind of like one of the big free agent trades. And he's been proving everybody wrong, because on both sides of the ball, he's been performing extremely well. So I want to give credit to Caleb Durbin. He did his thing again tonight. It just sucks that, as a complete team, the team stinks. So that's what I've got for tonight, at least. Something positive there. Caleb Durbin. Who would have thought?
Yeah, Durbin's been a different player, and it all tracks back to when he started going to his own personal hitting coach that he has to drive to Waltham to go see. But that's how dysfunctional your organization is, that players have to go see their own personal hitting coaches outside of the stadium before games to get themselves right. And good for Caleb Durbin for doing that, because, look, this guy was not a bad player with Milwaukee last year. He got Rookie of the Year votes. He was a good player. He played playoff games for them. And he got here and something went wrong. He couldn't figure it out. I remember the famous Tony Mass line of, he looks like he's swinging a telephone pole at the plate. And that's how it looked. He just looked like he was overmatched. And, we were kind of looking at it going, what the hell did you trade for this guy for? But now I think you're starting to see who Caleb Durbin really is. And again, I think it's because he got away from driveline. I know that people are sick of talking about driveline, but look, I tweeted out the other day, it's not a one-size-fits-all model. it's good for some players, but for others, it completely derails them. And I think that's what happened with Caleb Durbin. I think the driveline guys were trying, you know, get him about launch angle and, oh, you got to do this and do that. And he's not that guy. Caleb Durbin's like, what, 5'7"? He's not going to be a huge power hitter. The only guy, like, he's not going to be Dan Uggla. He's not going to be Jose Altuve. Those are very rare in this sport. What you're seeing now, I think, is what Caleb Durbin really is. He's a doubles hitter. He's a singles hitter. Like, he can get on base. He can move the offense. And yeah, Juan, you're right. He plays a very good third base, which I actually did not expect. I thought he'd be better suited at second base, but he does well over there at third. So good on him for, you know, realizing what the problem was and kind of, you know, shoving driveline aside and say, no, I'm going to go see my own personal hitting coach because that's where I feel more comfortable. And he's a completely different player. So I'm not telling you that Caleb Durbin's going to turn into like an MVP candidate or anything like that. But if he's going to turn into what he was with Milwaukee last year, where he got rookie of the year votes and he was, you know, an everyday player and was a contributor in the playoffs, that's what you need. That's what this Red Sox team desperately needs. Any injection of offense will take at this point. So, and again, he's young. He's 26 years old. So he's still growing as a player himself. And to see him turn it around like this, you know, at this point in the season when the team desperately needs it, I think is really good. So yeah, hats off to him. And what I would tell Caleb Durbin is keep seeing that hitting coach. Like, and you know what? If the Red Sox, you know, want to stop being cheap for once and actually get the hitting coach to Fenway Park instead of having Caleb, you know, drive to Waltham every day, fine. Do something like that. But keep doing what you're doing because clearly it's working.
In the last month, he's had four homers, 13 or 14 RBIs. He's been able to bump his batting average up from 166 up to 221 right now. He totally stuck the middle finger up to driveline. Why isn't everybody else doing it? Durbin didn't start every single game to start the year. He's played in quite a few. And truth be told, at this point, actually, at no point this year did I want Alex Bregman over Caleb Durbin or anybody else at third base. I thought $40 million for Bregman was insane. You're never going to get me to change my tune on that. But Durbin actually looks like by the end of it, he could hit 12, 13 home runs, maybe 60 to 70 RBIs. Is he going to be Wade Boggs good hitting 300? No, I don't think so. But could he be a spark plug kind of guy at third base? Yeah, he's young enough that I think that he could be a possible difference maker. And at one point, some people thought maybe Monasterio is the steal of the trade. I don't think so. I think to your point, Jason, like you were talking about earlier, he got some important votes in some major awards. I don't think you get those by accident. And at 26 years old, you're not quite at your peak yet, but you're close. So we're about to see the top of the hill for Durbin. I am shocked that the Boston Red Sox are relying now specifically on Caleb Durbin and Wilson Contreras for a majority of their offense. Now, Jaren Duran can also get streaky too, but Jaren Duran's sitting just over 200. There's been steady increase, steady decline. Durbin's just been trending up. He's had four multi-hit games in a row. And no, it's not all, you know, home runs, triples, and doubles, predominantly singles, to your point. I'll take that. I'll take that out of your third baseman. I'm totally cool with that. First baseman's mashing. I'll take that out of Wilson Contreras. We still have five other holes. This ring around the rosy bullshit, excuse my language, at catcher is absolutely astounding. It is outstanding for all the wrong reasons. You can't commit to a catcher. You have your catcher batting first. Nobody does that because it doesn't work. But the Boston Red Sox are like, yeah, we're going to change the wheel. We're going to see. We're going to show you how to do it. And this is what happens. It's a disaster class of what not to do on a baseball team. It is outstanding to watch this team play.
It's the numbers, guys. Y'all, like, You saw the report that came out that, you know, they fired all their scouting people, and now they're thinking about bringing in scouts, like, because they're not depending on what you can see. They're not depending on that. They're depending on a spreadsheet. That's what Breslow loves to do. Hey, let me look at the numbers, right, that I am cooking up together to see if this player fits what I'm looking for this team, rather than looking at with your two own eyes, does this work out? That's the problem with this organization. Another guy that I want to crush is Jarin Durant. I know that we're talking about Caleb Durbin here, but Jarin Durant is another one. Like, at what point is enough with him? I mean, you mentioned that he's streaky. Outside of May, April, he stunk. And in June, he's also been very, very bad. In the last 7 games, he's 1-for-22, guys. One hit in his last 22 at-bats. You can't deal with that with a guy that you're depending on being one of the leaders of this team. That's not going to work. And then you're depending on him defensively. And look what happened tonight. He looked like me in the outfield. Like, this is what we're working with, guys. Like, this is it. This is what Craig Breslow cooked up in the offseason. And now we're seeing the results of that.
I got nothing else to add to that one, Jason.
Yeah, no, the only thing I'll add is Juan made a great point about the scouting department, right? They're finally putting scouts at the pro level, which every major league team has scouts at the pro level. But the Red Sox, who think they're smarter than everyone else, said, no, we don't need scouts. We've got the spreadsheets. We've got the data sheets. We don't need human eyeballs. And it reminds me of when Bloom was in charge. And don't get me wrong, at this point, Chaim Bloom, way better than Craig Breslow. As much as we didn't like Bloom, I mean, no question. Look what the Cardinals are doing. They're doing fine. Like, he's growing something there. But as frustrating as the Bloom era was, there was one thing that got erased when Bloom took over, and it was the phrase eyeball test. They hated that phrase. Oh, well, we don't believe in the phrase eyeball test because, you know, it's all about the analytics and, you know, we have all these different ways to measure performance and this and that. So it really started with Bloom. They just threw that out the window. And to my point about Driveline, like, the reason why I keep harping on it is because they're the same way. Again, it was a Driveline employee who told Jim Rice, a Hall of Famer, to stop talking to the young players because you don't know what you're talking about, old man. And this is the new game now. And this is what we do. This is why Dustin Pedroia doesn't want to work for your team. The only team he ever played for his entire career, who gave him really good contracts and took care of him. And like, he should be a Red Sox staple, just like David Ortiz. And he wants nothing to do with your organization. Why? Because of Craig Breslow and his robots. Because Pedroia looks at it and says, well, analytically, every person would have said I was going to be a sucky baseball player because I was short and I, you know, whatever, I had too long of a swing or whatever. And he made a really good career out of it. If he stayed healthy, probably a Hall of Fame career. So he probably looks at Breslow and all these robots and goes, you guys don't know what you're talking about. Pedroia probably looks like Caleb Durbin and says, he reminds me a lot of me. Like, again, undersized guy who, yeah, he's not going to hit 25 home runs a year, but he can still be a really good player. And that's what they're losing. They're losing that part of baseball where it's like, it's not all about data sheets and analytics. Like, some of these guys who played the game know it better than the analysts. Again, Jarin Durant, when he had his really good year, 2024, he credited Dustin Pedroia for working on him with his swing. And now look at Durant now. Pedroia's out of the picture and Durant's barely hitting over 200. He looks like completely lost again. So, yeah, it's just more of the same crap. Like, until they get rid of the analysts and get rid of this, you know, stupid mentality of, well, it's all about data sheets and we don't want to talk to former players, it's only going to get worse.
Yeah. One of our commenters did kind of remind me of that scene from Moneyball where Brad Pitt's talking to Jonah Hill and he goes, why, Pete? and he snaps because he gets on base. Yeah, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to reinvent the wheel. Funny enough, Dustin Pedroia's 3-home run game. Do you know what stadium it was at?
Was that Coors?
Was that Coors Field?
Yeah, okay.
Was that Coors Field? He had a legendary game. I just gotten back from work. My parents are like passed out. The Red Sox are done. I'm looking and Pedroia's already got 2 home runs. I'm like, wouldn't that be funny if he had a 3rd one? And then the next day, I think he got injured and then he was out for like a long period of time, which really sucked. But I never forgot Dustin Pedroia. I'm pretty sure, and you can check me and I'll completely admit I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure 3-homer game, Coors Field, then was injured for a prolonged period of time. Despite what people think about Dustin Pedroia, whether you like him, love him, hate him, loathe him, I don't care. If that man is giving you advice, a former MVP and Rookie of the Year is giving you advice, you take that advice. If somebody from Driveline is telling somebody like Jim Rice to be quiet, that they don't know what they're doing, old-timer, you completely have full authorization to shove them in front of a moving vehicle. Just right in front of the car. This is to that point. People that have never, like, I'm sorry. I'm not going to be taking advice from someone who plays Major League Baseball the show. You don't know Jack, okay? You didn't play the game. You don't know the first thing about baseball. You know how to, like, hit X and square and circle and all the random buttons on a controller and crap. But you don't get it. You don't understand it. It's not the same thing. Just because numbers look great on a screen does not translate automatically to success. What happened in Moneyball worked out to a point. But at the end, they didn't win. They lost to Minnesota in 5 games. They were up 2-0, or excuse me, I think they lost, then they won the next 2, then they lost games 4 and 5. But you still lost. You still lost. And yes, you set the record for the most wins in the American League. You still lost. So this is still very much a game where it's pay to play. The more you pay, the more fun you get to have when you play. You can't expect a team with $60 million or $55 million to compete with the albatrosses there. The difference is that the Boston Red Sox have an albatross salary, or however you want to look at it, and we're still playing like a bottom feed team, like bottom of the barrel team. It makes no sense. With how the Boston Red Sox are playing, you'd assume their payroll's at 60, 70 million, not 250 million. I can't keep talking about it because I'm not angry. I'm not upset. I'm just past disappointed too. This is it. This is our team. We're in June. You still have July, August, and September. Get ready, Jason. As you quoted one day, let's ride. It's going to be a fun one, guys. You still got 90 plus games, guys. It's brutal.
To your point about Pedroia, by the way, almost 16 years ago to the day was that 3-home run game. It was June 24th, 2010.
Yeah.
Against Colorado at Coors Field. Yep.
Yes. And can you tell me how many games he played after that before he got injured? Was it the next day?
I don't know. I didn't look that part up.
It's all good.
But
I remember that.
You're probably right. He probably got hurt.
Yeah. And that was the thing. I remember getting really upset because it happened. I'm like, crap, man, there goes our season. Like, we're depending on the pint-sized Titan, and we're not going to get it done. All right. Enough about Durbin. Next on the hit parade, we have somebody who did very, very well, Jason, today, and it would be a shame to not give him his due.
Yeah, once again, another Red Sox start gets wasted by the terrible offense, and that is Jake Bennett this time. I like this kid. Like, I like what I've seen from him so far. This is definitely his best performance of the year. Granted, it is the Rockies, and, you know, I don't want to take too much away from the kid, but they have 2 good hitters in their lineup right now. It's Hunter Goodman, and it's the first baseman there, Rumfield. That's it. Okay, the rest of their offense is really, it's dog food. Brendan Doyle is hurt, so that's a big part of their lineup that's missing. But pitching in Coors Field is not easy. It's a challenge. There's a lot of pitchers that really struggle out there. That's why Colorado can't sign any free agent pitchers, because it's a nightmare to pitch out there. It's like pitching on the moon. But he did really well. No runs, 4 hits, 9 strikeouts. He was in command. I mean, he had that lineup just in the palm of his hand. And, you know, I think at the time we were a little confused about the Jake Bennett trade because they basically gave up Luis Perales to get him. Luis Perales is 2 years younger. And people are saying, well, Perales was really good in the Red Sox system. Like, I know he got hurt, but why'd they give him up? Jake Bennett is starting major league games and should be winning them for you. Luis Perales can't get out of the Washington Nationals AAA system right now. So if you want to criticize Breslow, and believe me, we all do, that's one trade that he might have actually nailed there. Because Jake Bennett, you know, 25 years old, big lefty, throws hard, and he was in command tonight. So, look, you can never have too much pitching. We know this. We've seen Red Sox teams in the past that have a lack of pitching, and it's more of a nightmare than even this team is. So you have good young pitching, and Jake Bennett is one of them. So he was on fire tonight. It sucks that the team let him down. He should have had a win. But ultimately, I like the projection of Jake Bennett right now. I think that he's on a good path. I think that he could be a guy that maybe somewhere down the road challenges for a rotation spot, depending on what happens with trade deadline. Obviously, Sonny Gray is probably on the block. So if Sonny Gray gets traded, I think at this point, I'd rather see Jake Bennett get those starts than Brian Bayo. So I think at this point, he's surpassed Brian Bayo on the depth chart. So all in all, you know, good performance from him. And I'm excited for his future.
One. Wine, you're still muted, buddy. We lost Juan for a second. I mean, here's the thing. I don't know how I felt about Jake Bennett originally, but here's the thing. We've actually kind of done really well with Conley early. We've done well with Peyton Tolley. Are they perfect? No, they're not Tarik Skubal. But they're serviceable arms, and they're going to go out there. They're going to get you 5 to 6 innings. It might not be the sexiest start, but they're both going to do well. And Jake Bennett, 4-hit, 9-strikeout for somebody that's debuting this year, quality start, only 72 pitches. He was averaging less than 15 pitches an inning. I think, if I'm not mistaken, he was averaging 12 pitches an inning, 6 times 12. 72, right? If I'm not mistaken, right? I think I'm right. 6 times 12.
Yep.
Yeah. So he's averaging 12 pitch innings, right? 12 pitches. You give the standard starter 15 and you hope that you can get it going on, right? He absolutely dominated. It is so sad that we couldn't get it for him tonight because he pitched his socks off. You don't strike out 9 guys by accident. It just doesn't happen. And it's unfortunate, but I will say, silver lining, if this is foreshadowing of what is to come for the foreseeable future in 2027, 2028, I am all for it. I'm all for this. And truth be told, dude, if your rotation of the near future consists of Conley early, Peyton Tolley, and Jake Bennett, I'm not complaining. You got Ranger Suarez there as well. I think Sonny Gray is gone. I think he's open to entertaining the no trade. And I, oddly enough, I love Garrett Crochet, but I wonder if the Red Sox are going to Chris Sale it and just send him packing and someone's willing to Rafi Devers it and just pay the full contract and then it's off the books for the Boston Red Sox. I don't see it happening, but there's a chance. Either way, Jake Bennett, masterclass performance in Colorado, a hitter-friendly park, and he dominated. Juan, I think we have you back, do we?
What about now? Good, we're good. Good.
Yep, we got awesome. You back. Yep, awesome. Go ahead.
All right, listen, I'll tell you this much: 7 hits, 14 strikeouts in his last 2 outings. Yes, this was the Colorado Rockies, but his last outing was against the Blue Jays, and he still pitched well. The game ended 3-0. That's our offense not being able to produce any runs. I love what I'm seeing from this kid, and let me tell you something, Jason. You mentioned Brian Bayo. Brian Bayo's not seeing this major league roster. I think we've seen the last of Brian Bello. And I hope at least, because what we've seen from Early, what we've seen from Toley, and now Jake Bennett, he deserves to be on this roster, even if Sonny Gray is no longer on this team, if we end up trading him away like we should. He's deserved a spot on this roster. He's confident. He has an arsenal. And, I mean, what else can you expect from him? So I really did love what I saw from him tonight. Sometimes I'll look at these pitchers, and I'm not just looking at, well, okay, let me see the numbers, right? Let me see what their final line was. Is how confident are you as you're dealing out there? Are you trusting in all of your pitches? And tonight, he pretty much did. So I love what I saw from him. I think that he deserves a spot on this roster no matter what. And, I mean, let's see what happens, because this is about next season. This is not about this year anymore. And I think he belongs on this roster. So, man, just proud of him. 25 years old. I think he's 6'4". He's tall, so he has a weird angle. I love to see that from a left-handed pitcher. So, man, we'll see. We'll see what we got. But he really dealt tonight.
I think Jeremy's like 6'5", 6'6", so he's like Jeremy's size. Caleb German's 5'6". He's my size. I think, Jason, you're 5'8", right? You got me by a little bit?
5'9"? I'm 5'8", according to my license. So, yeah, we'll go with that.
I'll take that, 5'8". So I'm Caleb Durbin's size. I'm 5'6", with high heels on. Joking. Juan, how tall are you? I don't think I've ever asked you that. How tall are you? Are you 6 foot?
No, 5'11". I have told people that I'm 6 foot, but I'm not. I'm 5'11".
Yeah, I'm 6 feet with really high heels on. Otherwise, there's no chance. Jason, absolutely. Anything else you want to add to Bennett? I mean, he was an absolute rock star today.
No, I think just Juan nailed it. Like, this is a guy that can be part of your future. I mean, that's the exciting part, right? We don't know what's going to happen in 2027, if there's going to be a season or not. But he's under team control, and he's young. He's under 30. And I'm sorry, like, with Brian Bello, I know Brian Bello is still young, and you have him under contract, which makes it a little bit awkward. But I've seen more out of Jake Bennett than I've seen out of Brian Bello the last 3 years. I mean, seriously, like, I think Bennett just has better stuff. He has better composure on the mound for sure. Brian Bello is still a child. I think it's exciting, the fact that, like, even if he just, you know, if his ceiling is just a number three, that's fine. Because, again, your pitching program is one of the few things that's working this year. Connelly, Early, and Peyton Toley could project to be ones or twos. You still have Garrett Crochet for now. I know, Charlie, you tease, you know, maybe trading him, and believe me, you're not the first one to do that. I know a lot of people are feeling that way. But if Garrett Crochet gets healthy and returns to form, suddenly you've got a packed starting rotation with just a bunch of lefty killers. I mean, it'd kind of be all lefties if Ranger Suarez, you know, is in there too. But hey, that's not the worst thing. A lot of teams don't know how to combat lefties. So I like that trade. I, you know, again, can hammer Breslow for a lot of things, but trading Luis Perales, who can't stay healthy, for a 6'4 left-hander who throws hard and has a good arsenal, and you see what he can do now, that trade's looking pretty good. So yeah, I'm excited for his future for sure.
That rotation would be Garrett Crochet, lefty, Ranger Suarez, lefty, Conley Early, Peyton Toley, Jake Bennett. You have five lefties. That's, you have five. I don't think the Red Sox have ever had five before, but I do remember when we were really lefty heavy, when you had, oh my God, was it Drew Pomerantz? I don't know if it was Chris Sale, David Price, like in that, Pivetta was righty. He wasn't a lefty. I can't remember who the other one was, but there was four at one point. And I remember thinking, what the hell are we doing? We have four lefty pitchers. That's crazy. But I was only saying that because if you do have the right matchup and you have a lefty pitcher with a right-handed hitter at Fenway Park, that can't be good. Like, you could get torched there. So I didn't really like that. But imagine an entire rotation of just lefties. The Boston Red Sox could actually feasibly have that in 2027 if there's a season. You really could stroll those five boys out, and that's your rotation. I don't think it's ever happened in Major League Baseball. Maybe it has, but I don't know the last team that did five. Anything else you guys want to add to Jake Bennett?
I don't think they'll end up going with the five lefties on that rotation. I think the smart move here would be to use one of those arms to move them for a bat. Whether it's Jake Bennett, I think Toley is probably the odd man out between Toley and Early. Moving one of those guys for a hitter, that's the way to go. Because, I mean, it would be awesome to see these five lefties because they can dominate all five of them. But I don't think they're going to go that route. You move one of those arms for a hitter, I think that's the route to go.
So one comment before we shift over to the third point. From Maverick 987, they removed him after 70 pitches, I think. Like, why? He could have went another one or two, maybe, right? Do you think analytics is the reason why? Or do you think it's because he's still young and they're wanting to stretch him out appropriately? Because the Boston Red Sox really care about being appropriate. If he went one more inning, do we win this game?
No, I don't think it matters. Guerrero has been dealing lately. I mean, he's throwing 102 miles per hour on a sinker. So he's been dealing. The problem here is that Whitlock and Chapman have only pitched four times each this month. That's really what it came down to. They're cold.
Good point.
They're cold. It's a 2-0 lead against the worst team in Major League Baseball, and you have your two best guys coming out of the bullpen. That's overthinking it, unfortunately, I would say.
I wonder if analytics had something to do with it. Jason, anything you want to add?
I think analytics probably had some part to do with it. I think they had a game plan for Bennett going in. But yeah. I agree with Juan. I think it's more just, you know, they had the set up. Like, Guerrero pitched really well, and then you feel pretty good about Whitlock and Chapman, which you should, but they just didn't have it tonight. And this is the problem with being a sucky team, is that your eighth and ninth inning guys aren't getting the work that they're used to having because you're not winning. You're behind, and you're not in a safe situation most of the time. So they're just kind of sitting on the bench, you know, getting cold, as he said. So, yeah, I think analytics had a little bit to do with it, but ultimately they should have won this. The game plan was correct.
I agree. Just,
it faltered in the end. Yeah.
Yeah.
Even if they left them for an extra inning, Guerrero came out clean in the seventh. So what ended up happening?
He's throwing gas.
What kind of killed it was the eighth and the ninth inning, where they had eight straight hits, and that was against your two best arms out of the bullpen. That's really what it came down to. So even if you left them for an extra inning, the damage was done against your two best arms, who you were going to go to in Whitlock and Chapman.
You're probably right. We're going to see Guerrero throw 101, 100, and 101 again. Let's pivot. Obviously, we had a couple of highlights here. Durbin doing great. Jake Bennett on a chariot horse, just absolute star. But the Boston Red Sox closed the game against the Rockies, allowing eight straight hits, seven singles, and then a game-losing triple. Which I had to double check. Our very own Johnny Fontaine said that's eight hits in a row, and I think they mentioned on the cast as well. I was like, there's no way this is possible. Sure enough, that's true. The Boston Red Sox, I mean, the Rockies tried to lose the game in the eighth inning, and then they're like, guy, we don't have to try. They'll blow it on their own. If we just don't run into dumb errors and dumb mistakes, we'll win this game. You shouldn't run on Seidon Rafaela. That's a stupid mistake. I thought they learned from that. Because if you hit it to Abreu, that's another really good arm. I don't know what you're thinking. And you did it again in the eighth inning. Fast forward to the ninth inning. You go single. Second batter, I forget who it was, but first pitch, ripped it. And that's first and second. Then it was like the second or third pitch. A very hard hit bunt. Like, that wasn't like a little chopper, like right in front for the catcher. That was like a almost like a swinging bunt type thing, but just you could hear it. It made proper contact. Durbin fields the ball. I'm saying you got one out. And Monasterio blew it. You have bases loaded now, and you have no outs. And I think it was the second pitch because he fouled the first one off. Seven straight singles. McCarthy hits one down the third baseline, and Jaren Duran can't play it off the carom the first time. And then I don't know what happened. It was like the ball was covered in oil. Like, he couldn't grab the ball, throw it, and you know, maybe Chapman can make the game interesting, but I'm not going to lie. Chapman didn't have it. And the Boston Red Sox just, I mean, all that hard work you did in the eighth inning, you blew it. You threw the game away because you couldn't throw, you couldn't field, and you couldn't pitch. Now, Aroldis Chapman is going to be the number one pitching arm out of the bullpen available at the deadline, even with this guy's ERA jump from 0.84 to 2.08. It'll come back down to one something. It'll happen. Why? Because he's Aroldis Chapman, and he's just defying science and human nature. I'm still not nervous about it. I'm frustrated about it. But Juan, you said it. If you pitch once every never, how do you get warm? How do you build a level of consistency necessary to continue doing your job? I don't care. At this point, you should be coming out once every third day. Once every third game, I want to see you out there. You're losing by six, go out and pitch the eighth inning. I don't care. It doesn't matter. There's a good chance you might not pitch the next game anyways. Who cares? What are we doing? So I think you're right. Juan, I think you hit it on the head there. There's no consistency there. Because there's no consistency, it's hard for you to kind of get a feel. And Aroldis Chapman, star. He's a star. And one blip. Ultimately, I don't think it's going to deteriorate from his impact value. But it was hard to watch that ninth inning. And Jason, I probably should have shut it off 4 minutes before I did, thanks to your comment. But I want to subject myself to, I don't know, playing with sandpaper in unfriendly ways.
He's 38 years old, right?
38. He's 38 years old. He throws 100.
He's only pitched four times in this month. He also went out there, if you remember, in the early part of the month, he went out there with an injury. He was pitching with a hamstring injury. You were asking him to go out there and pitch that way. So, like, this is what he's dealing with, guys. Like, he's dealing with a team where he doesn't go out there every single night. He's already on the latter part of his career. He's dealing with an injury, and you're also still asking him to go out there. I am afraid. Charlie, I don't think we're on the same boat here. I am afraid that things can kind of turn around for him before we end up trading him. I think that the time to trade him is now. He's at his peak. He's 38 years old. You have to be careful. He can suffer an injury out of nowhere. His production can kind of change drastically because, again, dealing with the injuries and the age. I saw this happening tonight, and it was a wake-up call for Breslow. He's going to be in charge of the deadline. You have to trade him now before things kind of turn around for Chapman.
I mean, it's the old saying, Father Time is undefeated. And, you know, look, the Red Sox have been lucky with Aroldis Chapman because they acquired him, you know, when he was with the Pirates. He had a very unspectacular year with the Pirates. Like, he did okay. He wasn't terrible, but a lot of people saw him as, oh, okay, this guy's on the back nine of his career and he's just hanging on with any team and, you know, he's not really worth anything. He comes to Boston last year. He was dynamite. And he kind of reminded people, he's not just great. He's a future Hall of Famer. Like, let's acknowledge that. He's going to get into the Hall of Fame just with the amount of saves, the amount of strikeouts as a reliever. So, yeah, he's going to get in there. But you can't just see that and say, okay, he's going to be invincible. Like, no, as you said, he's 38. Father Time's going to catch up. So I kind of thought it was a little bit ballsy for them to extend him anyway after last year. But I kind of understood it too because, okay, if he has another good year, you flip him at the deadline. Well, now I don't know if you can wait till the deadline. Deadline's over a month away. Like, are you sure that Aroldis Chapman is not going to have a few more clunkers mixed in there? Because if he does, teams that are looking for relief help, they'll go elsewhere. Because I hate to say it, but relievers kind of grow on trees. Like, you can find high-quality relievers anywhere. And there are plenty of teams, you know, again, now we're starting to see teams that are dropping out of it, like the Marlins, the Mets, you know, like, there are other teams that have good quality relievers that are going to be shopping them at the deadline. And the Red Sox, at least in terms of last report, are hanging up on teams that are calling about Chapman. No, you can't be doing that. You've got to be fielding offers for him right now. And I agree with Juan, like, trade him sooner rather than later, because the more you wait, if he has a few more clunkers mixed in, his value is going to go way down. Because I mentioned this last week that, You know, remember what the Yankees did in 2016 when they flipped him for Gleyber Torres? And again, Gleyber Torres didn't stay with the Yankees. He's with the Tigers now, but he's a good, productive major leaguer, everyday player, power hitter, second baseman. They got him for half a year of Aroldis Chapman. And then the Cubs won the World Series and the Yankees signed him right back. You can do something like that if you're clever enough. I don't know if Breslow is, but if you're clever enough, you can get yourself major league ready talent to come in for a guy like Chapman, because every trade deadline, teams get stupid, especially the desperate ones. And I honestly, I'd look no further than a guy like AJ Preller in San Diego. I know he's got Mason Miller out there, so he's probably not going to trade for him, but there are other GMs that are as desperate and stupid as AJ Preller. You can take advantage of guys like that with a guy like Aroldis Chapman, who, yeah, he's 38 and maybe the cliff is coming and we don't know it yet. But until we know it, you might as well take advantage of, you know, the performance he's put on and get as much back as you can, because you're not going anywhere this year. Like, even if you somehow get back into the wildcard race, is Aroldis Chapman really going to be the difference between you being a playoff team or not? Probably not, right? So why not just get the max value back that you can for a guy like that? It's not part of your future. I know you extended him. You know, he's got a mutual option in his contract if he reaches 40 innings, but that's not your problem. He's not part of your future. You have Garrett Whitlock signed for the next couple of years. Just make him the closer. Trade Aroldis Chapman, make him the closer. It's the easiest thing. And for whatever reason, they're sitting on their hands. And I feel like tonight was a blip on the radar. Again, Aroldis Chapman has a career ERA of close to 10 at Coors Field, which, not surprising, a lot of pitchers do. But, and obviously, you're not going to not bring him out there just because of that. He's your closer. It's what you do. But just make sure that those don't start to pile up, because his trade value is still pretty high right now. So strike while the iron's hot, get the maximum value back, and just, I think once Chapman is traded, that kind of signals, okay, we're done. It's, you know, it's selling time and, you know, we're punting. And maybe that's why they're waiting, which is stupid. They shouldn't wait for that reason, but it's time, because you don't want to afford a few more clunkers like this, because his value is just going to go way, way down.
I know he's gone. I think any Red Sox fan with half a lick of sense, and believe me, there are quite a few out there on Twitter. If you don't even have to search that hard, there are a lot of dummies out there. I don't have to name drop them. They're just getting torched by people anyways. I know it's happening. I know it's going to come. It's only a matter of time. I don't know how many games. You're totally right. I get why you're saying what you're saying. It just sucks, because this entire year has been a waste. They didn't take it seriously. You brought up Conley Early and Peyton Tolley, not because they were ready, because you had no other options. Yet Garrett Crochet, he went down. Ranger Suarez, you signed him to a 5-year, $130 million deal. He's done his job. Sonny Gray came on. He's a year for 1 year, and then he's gone. Garrett Whitlock, I never want to see in the rotation ever again. He's your eighth inning guy. It is a very solemn time to be a Sox fan, because we have a front office that is unwilling to make the difficult decisions to be better. We're instead going to hamstring ourselves by holding on to contracts that are not only irrelevant, that there was no purpose for them in the beginning. You overpaid for certain people when no one offered them major contracts. So when Yoshida signed his contract with the Boston Red Sox, for example, did anybody offer him 4 years even? I think the best offer he had was 3 at maybe $60 million. And the Red Sox were like, no. We got one better for you. Try 5 years, $90 million or whatever it was. I can't remember off the top of my head. I'm just going to get angry thinking about it. But we kind of did this to ourselves. And we got lucky getting rid of Rafi Devers. I know Dougie Sunshine wants to bring him back, but I don't know what he puts in his sippy cup. I don't want to drink his sippy cup. I want my own sippy cup, and I don't want Dougie's because I don't want Devers back either. Yeah, he can hit, but I don't want someone who isn't being a responsible leader going like this, waving off a pinch runner when you literally have squares for feet. Like, you don't have wheels, dude. I don't know what you're thinking. I don't want you back either. The Boston Red Sox really need to focus on retooling. Wilson Contreras could be a huge piece of your future if you really want him to be. Unfortunately, I think if a team calls for him, you're probably letting him go too, which sucks. So Contreras is gone. Sonny Gray is gone. Chapman is gone. Whitlock might be gone. Jaron Duran, I don't know. But that's five guys right there. This is 1997, 2003, Florida Marlins territory. Fire sale. The whole thing, just blow it up. And honestly, if someone comes a knocking for Roman Anthony or Marcelo Meyer, honestly, if someone comes calling for either one of those two, would you be willing, both of you, Jason first, Juan second, would either one of you be willing to move either one of those pieces?
I think Meyer for sure. Yeah, Anthony, I would hesitate a little bit. I think he's had some bad injury luck. I still think the guy that you saw in the second half of last season is what he can be. So I think he's got a really high ceiling. Meyer, I'm good. Yeah, I'm willing to take calls on him. Honestly, right now, I think for me, the only two guys that I would deem untouchable on this team are Anthony and Sadon. That's it.
Yeah.
And it's only because Sadon is so good defensively, and now the bat is starting to get there. He's becoming a five-tool player, and you've got him under contract. So,
yeah.
Apart from those two, I'm taking calls on everybody. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Jeremy convinced me maybe a month ago on trading absolutely just everybody on this roster. I mean, Marcelo Meyer would have been gone in the offseason if it were up to me. There were rumors about Arizona asking for him in order to get Ketel Marte, who I wanted on this roster if they were serious about competing. Marcelo Meyer wouldn't be on this roster to start this season. So I'm certainly at the point where everyone's on the board. Everyone. I mean, what? No one's proven anything, man. Like, that's where we are. You haven't proven anything. That includes Roman Anthony, who's supposed to be our savior. When he's been healthy, he hasn't proven anything. So, yes, absolutely, everyone is on the table. Everyone.
Just a very fun year we have. Jason, anything else you want to add?
No, I mean, again, like, I think I get what you're saying, Juan. Like, yeah, everyone should be on the table. And look, if they're lucky, they can pull off what the White Sox did. The White Sox had a fire sale, and now...
Incredible.
And they're in first place with a lot of the guys they traded for. Miguel Vargas, and they went out and signed Murakami, and, you know, they developed their own guys. Like, if you can pull something off like that, sure, it's hard to do. It's really hard to do. You've got to be smart. And Chris Getz, the GM there in Chicago, is very good at what he's doing. Craig Breslow, not so much. So I agree that, in general, everyone should be on the table, but be very careful because... Remember the guy who's in charge, and he's kind of an idiot.
I have nothing else to add to that one. I looked at the rest of the matchups. You already lost game one. You should have won this one. By right, you probably should have swept this crap team, and you're showing everybody why you're the other crap team in the American League. Game two, Sonny Gray is going up against a guy named Sean Sullivan, who probably should be pitching for the Red Sox with that name. He's making his debut. There's absolutely no reason why Sonny Gray shouldn't win that game, except for the fact that it's the Boston Red Sox and we find a way. Ranger Suarez is pitching against Kyle Freeland, a guy with a 7.36 ERA. There's absolutely no reason why you can't win games two and three. I don't know how anyone can make a case against it, other than the fact that it's the Boston Red Sox and we just have a fantastic way of just blowing it up. Do you guys think we're going to win two and three?
I mean, I can make a case against it. We were undefeated. Don't do it.
Yeah.
And we lost that game. We lost tonight. Like, we had arguably the best closer in the game, and we lost the game. Like, that's the Boston Red Sox. That's the 2026 Boston Red Sox. Yes, the numbers, the matchups favor the Boston Red Sox. Sonny Gray, 8-1. He should totally just dominate tomorrow. Ranger Suarez has been dominating. The question is, are we going to score runs when we make every pitcher look like they're an ace? Like, how can we seriously come on the podcast and say, hey, I'm confident the Boston Red Sox are going to win tomorrow? No, they've got to earn that. I'll pick against them every game if I have to. And I am going to pick against them again. I don't care.
So typically I would say F this team. They're going to lose the next two. They're going to get swept. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow because, again, Sean Sullivan is a new pitcher. Red Sox always struggle against guys they haven't seen before, so that one could be a toss-up. If you don't win Wednesday against Kyle Freeland, do you understand? Kyle Freeland's one of the worst pitchers in Major League Baseball history. Not just this year. His entire career. He has almost 100 losses. He doesn't even have 70 wins. His career record is 67-97. He has a career ERA close to 5. If you don't torch that guy, there's a problem. So what I think is going to happen is they'll probably lose tomorrow because, again, new pitcher they haven't seen before. He's going to just start mowing them down. You know, they'll probably do something stupid late in the game, either defensively or whatever, and they'll lose that one. They better win on Wednesday. If they get swept by the Rockies, oof. Like, I keep saying, I feel like every week I come on the show and I say, oh, it's a new rock bottom, a new rock bottom. No, you get swept by the Rockies, that's not rock bottom. You're at the Earth's core at that point. You are, like, the standard is in hell for this team if they get swept by the Rockies. So I think they'll probably lose tomorrow. They should win on Wednesday. Kyle Freeland stinks. He historically stinks. So if you can't beat him, you've got generational problems on this team.
I can't add anything else to that. I mean, it's one, I don't think you can either. I mean, but that's Kyle Freeland. When I see his name show up, that's like what teams see when they see the Boston Red Sox. Yes. Yes. We face Boston. We're facing Kyle Freeland. Kyle Freeland will probably have a career night. Watch that happen. June 22nd, calling it now, or June 23rd, depending on where you are. Kyle Freeland, I hate myself for saying this, will probably have the best pitching performance of his career against the Boston Red Sox. That it would make sense because it's us. Anything else you guys want to add? No. That is going to do it for your Bastards of Boston Baseball on the newly rebranded Fire Breslow podcast. Once more, if you want to check out any Boston Bastards of Boston Baseball content, check out bastardsofbostonbaseball.com. Everyone have a great one. Take care. Go Sox. And let's hope to surprise the masses.